This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Salut tous mes belles gays et mes beaux lesos. C'est Matthew Mitchum et vous écoutez à Joy 94.9.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. I'm sorry to say, however, that there's only two of us here today.
Yes,
Phil?
The better two.
Oh, are you sure about that?
Well, I can only say that when Gordon's not here.
and the lucky lad is away having a well-earned rest. He's gone away with his boyfriend.
Touring around the countryside.
Half his miserable luck.
Oh, and all this hot, nice hot weather too. Poor boy.
Been There, Done That is Joy's history program, and we have got quite a few items of history in our show today. And so Phil and Chris are here to present that to you. On today's show, we'll be talking about Mardi Gras, of course, from our promo that you heard at the beginning of the show, maybe. And we'll be talking about a couple of Olympic artists. We've already heard from Matthew Mitchum giving you the intro of Joy 94.9, but in French. So, Phil, what do you don't understand French terribly well, do you?
I understand that it is French.
Yes.
I don't translate.
So what do you think we should be doing about that?
I think we should get Matthew in here to the studios to record one in English.
That's just a personal feeling, isn't it?
Well, I saw him once at down in the gardens.
Yes.
And he's on my normal list because he's the same height as me.
Oh, right.
So he's not one of these freakishly tall people that I can't relate to.
Oh, no. And that's the beauty of swimmers and divers in young, small packages. They float through the air and don't make much of a splash at all.
That's right.
Also in today's show, we'll be talking about a couple of singers who've had tragic lives. Karen Carpenter, Gay Dusty Springfield. We're talking about them at this time because it's anniversaries, sadly, of them. And we'll also be talking positively about Chaz Bono and Lou Reed. And we'll do a little bit of a follow-up on the Mardi Gras just to remind you again. And we'll be talking about history in the making. We hope it is history in the making. We'll be talking about a plan to actually send people and land them on Mars. Sadly for them, it's only a one-way ticket. So there's a few little ethical problems there to be overcome, as much as mechanical problems of getting these lovely people to Mars.
But given our current political climate, maybe it's not such a bad idea. You wouldn't have to worry about stuff, would you?
Oh, thank you, Phil. That's very positive. So this coming weekend, we'll be experiencing Mardi Gras, either going there and experiencing it from the sidelines of the street parade, or watching it on TV or listening to it on radio.
Yes.
But we've got to remind everybody that Joy will be broadcasting live on SBS Radio 3 on the Saturday night of the actual parade.
Now, that to most people will mean you can hear it on your TV set.
Yes.
Because that's the only way I can get SBS Radio 3. And it's accessible as any TV channel.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good sound.
It is nice and clear and crystal.
Yeah.
But that's on the Saturday night. To actually see it on SBS TV, you're going to have to wait till their recorded program has been edited and made the right length for re-showing in the time slot that they've allocated for it.
Is that because when they've done it live in the past, there might have been some images broadcast that were not for broadcast?
Well, it could have been, but also there's been lots of gaps in the parade, and it's not very easy to talk about, oh, they're all standing around waiting for the parade to get moving again.
I guess the commentary dries up when the parade stops.
That's it. They can't go to an ad break or anything like that, so the whole thing is, yes, take it, edit, and then squeeze it up, make it compact, cut it down to size, and that's why you have the two presenters sitting with their back to the parade giving a commentary, because they're watching it on the monitors.
And it's changed a little, hasn't it, Mardi Gras? It's very much a celebration.
Well, what number parade is it? It must be getting up towards 40. I think it's either 39 or 40.
It's up there.
The reason for Mardi Gras actually occurring was because there was suffering about 40 years ago at a protest march on the streets of Sydney. About 500 activists in June 1978 descended on Darlinghurst in solidarity with New York's Stonewall Movement, which was itself an uprising against police actions against them in New York. But in Sydney, the police attitude at that particular time was, here are some weak and easy targets. We're going to zomp on these people and show them who's boss. Because at that stage, sexual activity was actually against the law, and there was extreme discrimination from the general community. So the parade ended up in violence, ill treatment, and public shaming, names being put in the newspapers and everything, against gay rights and against the activists at the hands of the police and of the government and of the media. So in lots of ways, it was an uprising. We've got a celebration event that occurs around about this time each year for the surviving community, the 78ers, and the current gay and lesbian community, which is standing on the shoulders of these original pioneers, these original elders that secured a change in law and in public attitude and certainly of the attitude of the police.
Yeah, and actually it was this time last year, 25th of the 2nd, 2016, New South Wales government actually apologised to the 78ers for the way they were treated back in 1978.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of apologies going around.
There are.
But that was, well, not only overdue, but much deserved, I would imagine.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And much like we've had our own apology here in the state government, it seems to have been happening all around Australia, that public attitudes have changed entirely and our day has come.
We still can't get them to say yes to equal marriage.
No.
But every little step at a time we'll take and see where we end up.
But isn't it interesting that so many people, well, at least those 500, were prepared to be in the public eye and stand up for their rights and wave a flag back at the powers that be at that time?
That comes out of anger, though. Because you would have been hearing about the people in Stonewall. You can only stay quiet for so long and put up with so much rubbish, and somewhere the little rubber band snaps and you just go and tell them what's happening.
Exactly. Someone who came out and didn't have a problem with police and public attitudes was Matthew Mitchum, our Olympics star, our diving star, and I do call him our Matthew Mitchum, because it was wonderful to actually have such a young and innocent person standing up there and almost challenging the public, how dare you say anything against me? I'm an athlete. I'm an athlete first. My sexuality doesn't matter.
And I remember how I found out he was gay.
How was this?
I was watching the live coverage.
Yeah.
He had his gold medal dive, so he hadn't been presented with it yet. He gets out of the water, runs straight to his boyfriend and plants a kiss straight on his lips. And I just remember thinking to myself, that's how it's done.
It definitely is. That's how it's done. Matthew has been part of Mardi Gras as well, because in 2009, just after his 2008 awards at the Olympics, and having been declared the Australian Sports Performer of the Year in 2008, Matthew Mitchum was the chief of parade at the Mardi Gras in 2009. And he went on to other less Olympic things. I think once you've reached the peak like that, it's only downhill from that point onwards. So he's maintained his position in our hearts and our minds as being such a marvellous example of an athlete, but also as a person who's come out. And admittedly, he wasn't the first Australian Olympian to come out, and there's been some before and some after, but he was a real notable in our hearts.
Yeah, and he's been very lucky in that towards the end of his diving career,
yeah,
so many interests outside the pool started entering his life.
Yes.
And so he had direction and something to do, which I think is a problem with, it's not just divers, but a lot of elite athletes.
Yeah. Well, sadly, we've got that example about Grant Hackett, who's found himself floundering after his life in the pool ended, and he lacked relevance in mind, and he didn't have a career to go on to. He didn't anticipate that there would be a life after swimming.
He I think, assumed that he would end up as a TV commentator and had a very brief stint doing that, but I don't think that worked out. You need more than a record to appear on TV. Yeah. You need a certain amount of charisma and visual talent.
Exactly. We've got someone else who came in around about 40 years ago in Australia was ABBA.
Just a little Swedish group.
A little Swedish group indeed. And there's so much of their catalogue that we could play, but we're not going to. We're going to play something else entirely.
Melbourne's lovable radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Phil and Chris, been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Someone who's having a birthday round about this time that we remember, 2nd of March 1950, is the singer Karen Carpenter. And she was part of a duo, her and her brother, who sang duets in the 1970s, but they are more of the straight mainstream music rather than part of the gay community. They weren't gay themselves, but they were part of our musical tapestry of that time.
And she had the most beautiful voice.
She also played the drums, and they decided that because her voice was so good, she in fact should sing solo on her own mic and leave someone else to do the drumming. Her brother, Richard Carpenter, was the other voice in their duo, and they were very, very popular on the music charts of that particular time. Karen suffered from a problem known as anorexia nervosa, an eating disorder that was little known at the time or even understood. And she died at the age of 32 from heart failure caused by complications relating to her illness. She used to take all sorts of bits and pieces so that she wouldn't put weight on her bones. She was only a small person, 5'4", 160 or so centimetres in height, and she weighed 66 kilo before all her dieting started, which was the right amount of meat on her bones. But she got to the stage where she had only half that weight on her body almost, and the organs within her body started to break up. And her brother wasn't much better. He was using some other form of medication.
Yeah, but the trouble with the disease, though, is you see what you look at in the mirror. What you see in the mirror is not your actual body. Her problem was that, well, she did get lots of treatment, and at one point she'd actually gained 14 kilograms, which would have been a huge effort. But you're fighting your own body image, and the internal voices must be incredibly powerful.
And the medical profession, of course, didn't understand why people would want to be doing this. They just thought it was dietary. They didn't realise it probably started within the head, and that's something now that we certainly understand a lot better, and we're able, hopefully sometimes successfully, to talk people out of that particular attitude. But it's a very, very hard battle. So that was poor Karen Carpenter. But someone else who had her own devils and people inside her head was Dusty Springfield. And Dusty died on the 2nd of March 1999, sort of. So in some ways, they shared the same day, the birthday of Karen Carpenter and the day that Dusty Springfield died. Dusty was, her whole life seemed to be a tragedy. She was the right person, not at the right place. She was gay, but she didn't really accept that, and she had problems fitting into the community that expected her to be one thing. And she was a child of the 60s. Of course, she was born in 1950, but in the 60s, when she was growing up, it was not a very comfortable place for her to be. Being gay was either a pitiable affliction or an actual mental illness. and quite often victims were treated with aversion therapy and electric shocks. And this is sort of the world that she found herself living in. And she was being educated in her young life by nuns who had plans for her.
And the trouble with that world is, and at that time, there wouldn't have been any role models.
No.
Somebody to relate to saying, well, okay, they're gay, I can be too. I'm sure the nuns never suggested that.
Oh, no. No, they would have actually either wanted her to be married or else become a nun as well. If she's going to get nun, that's what she could get.
Get plenty of nun.
That's right. So Dusty had feelings of inadequacy right through her life, and she had a second life, her private little life, and she used to get up and sing songs thinking she was Doris Day or Billie Holiday or some of the other people that she would have known of at that time. However, Dusty decided to bleach her hair and turn herself into someone else, a person that she could actually look up to. "I suddenly decided," she said, "in one afternoon, to be this other person who was going to make it." And so she separated herself into two lives, and there, that probably began a real problem for her. Which life am I living in? But anyway, so to be this other person, she decided to get into the singing act, which, because she had a good voice anyway, and be someone entirely who the original little person wasn't. And she immersed herself in jazz and the blues, but she merged rock and roll with a folksy formula, and she wore ornate dresses and stiff petticoats and her hair piled high, and she got a reputation. But during her performance life, whether it be around the world or just in the UK, she was torn between the two personas, the onstage persona and the private one. And she would come home and after a night of performance and just try to unwind from the tension of being this other person. And she hit the booze and she hit the pills and she really started making a mess of herself. And she wanted to be straight, and she wanted to be a good Catholic in one move. She wanted to be black when she was singing her other singing stars that she was emulating. And she couldn't be gay because that was going to be poisonous to her career. She was really on the fence with nowhere to go. Sadly, she fell into decline.
Well, in 1985, she was reduced to earning $500 a night, miming her old songs or own hits in West Hollywood gay bars, which would have been a severe drop from the top.
Exactly, Phil. So it was a very sad end to a career, but the gay community did identify with her long after she died, and she was a real wonderful person to consider emulating by the gay community. We didn't see the conflict in her soul. We only heard her music. So if you've got problems that have been raised in our little talk about Karen and Dusty, you could ring Lifeline on 13 11 14, or if you would feel more comfortable, there's a referral and counselling service operated for the gay community, and that is
QLife on 1800 184 527 from 3 p.m. till midnight every day.
So let's hear a nice song, an upbeat song from Dusty in the middle of nowhere, here on Joy.
Uplifting, informing, empowering. Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris and Phil. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Missing Gordon. Almost forgot his name, but we're missing him badly.
That's right.
Because he's such a fount of information as well. And three-way conversations actually works pretty good for us.
Yes, we miss the fluidity.
Quite often here on the show, we talk about events in history that talk about the future. But we've got a topic here now that relates to something that's in flow at the moment. It's futuristic in its content, but it's happening as we speak. And we're talking about an organization that is proposing to land the first humans on Mars and establish a permanent human colony there. Now, this is a bit spooky, isn't it?
It's not science fiction. I guess what's spooky is that it's not NASA, because we've sort of grown up with NASA and they do all this spacey sort of stuff.
NASA but being
It's the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. That's all right. But yeah, this is Mars One, who are Dutch, I believe.
Yes.
And they're a private consortium.
Yeah.
And they're not doing this all on their own. They are working with some American space contracting companies like Lockheed Martin and such.
Oh, rocket experts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really starting from scratch in a different approach to get to Mars.
Well, we've only got the example of man flying to the moon, and that was just a short rocket ride away.
Relatively speaking.
Exactly, a short rocket ride away. But Mars is a lot further, and in fact, it's going to be a one-way trip. And when you get there to Mars, you probably won't have a little lunar lander-type rocket to get you back to Earth.
Yeah, they don't currently have the technology to actually land something on Mars that could then launch something else.
All those Star Wars films and Star Trek and everything, they haven't got to that stage of development yet.
There's one other important factor.
Yeah?
They're fiction.
Oh, that's right.
So, yeah, it's hard to go get set your phaser on stun when you don't have a phaser. But, yeah, these people were supremely confident, but they've got a mammoth task.
Because, yeah, it's not like going to the moon, just putting a lander down there and then zooming back to your rocket ship and flying home.
Yeah. They're being fairly cautious in that they're going to send exploratory probes, which is what NASA are doing at the moment.
Yeah.
But these guys seem to believe, I hate that word, that they've found liquid water on the surface. So they're going to send a probe out there, I guess, to confirm that. They've got other missions before they start colonizing. So there'll be, I don't want to use the word robots, but they're going to send robots to create an atmosphere. So they'll build structures, start, if you like, growing oxygen and plant life and such for food before people arrive.
Sensible.
So, yeah, it's not going to be like Neil Armstrong putting that first step on the ground. It's like sending out the union to do some work first. But that's all very much pie-in-the-sky stuff at the moment because we haven't done this sort of thing before.
No. So it's a mammoth task to actually even get what you call the pre-colony there before any humans arrive.
Mm. But another problem with the distance of Mars is it's only once every 2 years do we have what's called a launch window. And this is from my NASA days at age 9. I guess you have to work at the closest proximity, so that shortens your journey. And there's various gravitational pulls that you can take advantage of, which reduces the fuel that you need. And it's a very complicated calculation.
Because Mars is whizzing around at a different speed around the sun to the Earth. So it's not as though, like the moon is very, very close to the Earth and is in orbit around the Earth, and we know it's going to be there, comes up every...
But we still only had certain launch windows with the moon.
Oh, yeah.
They were much more convenient than Mars, and we used the moon's gravitational pull to slingshot the capsules back to Earth, saving a lot of fuel. And that, I think, they learnt from science fiction.
But Mars itself is a long way away, and it's just got to be at the right place at the right time once the rocket with the robots or the humans on gets near enough. It's got to be there.
Yeah. Now, these people are a lot more excitable and, I guess, almost in a hurry to get there compared to NASA, who do things the snail's way. But even with that, they're talking in decades. So we're not trying to get this all done by the end of next year.
Oh, no.
So these probes and things are still in the 2020s, I believe.
Yes.
And launching...
Well, the cargo missions will be in 2024, and then in Mars One launch will be in 2026, which is a long time ahead. And it'll contain 4 astronauts in the rocket.
Is it 4 or 2?
4. They're talking about 4 at this particular schedule that I'm looking at. I'm not sure exactly who those 4 are going to be, because apparently there's been a selection process undertaken already where thousands of people put their names in, but they're not going to just send any old Joe Blow from Earth. Whoever goes has got to be highly qualified and probably from the scientific fraternity and a jack of all trades in those situations.
Yeah, I think it's probably a bit different again to NASA's approach, where the thought of sending civilians anywhere was just ridiculous. I suspect these people will be picked more on their social coping skills, because you're going to be spending your life with very few people, and you do have a one-way ticket. You can't just say, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. I would imagine the technical skills is a prerequisite, but a certain type of person would also have to go. And one that's, if you're going on a one-way trip, you don't want to see that as a negative thing.
But you've got to remember that the trip from Earth to Mars is going to be about 9 months in duration with current technology and the way things happen.
And you'll be in a little shoebox with three other people 24 hours a day, and you can't go and play outside.
No.
So, yes, if you're claustrophobic, please do not apply.
It's a freaky old situation to you to imagine that surely someone is going to have to go through this process somewhere along the line. Science is developing in one direction only at the moment. There's no teleporter at the other end to receive us.
And there was news last week. Somebody came out and said we've found seven new planets which could well turn out to be similar to Earth and therefore either have intelligent life or... The end of the story was that it would take us 700,000 years to get from here to those planets.
Yeah.
So I guess that kind of makes you look at Mars again. Maybe we could expand a little closer.
Yes. Well, we don't have very many options. So if, in fact, man outlives the Earth, then at least four people will be on Mars. Anything else. But what are they doing there? Is it just to prove that man can live out somewhere out in the universe?
Well, outside the Terra that we live on.
The little blue planet.
But there are some, I guess, ethical questions to be answered, because we currently explore Antarctica, but we don't leave any waste behind. So it's like we're there, we observe and we leave. Now, these people will be there and observing and trying to work out our capacity to stay there, but are they going to try to transform Mars into a mini-Earth? Because that would be technically possible at some point in the future. But what gives us the right to go and claim another planet? And who knows, we might find out later on that there are little microbial life forms that we've upset. All of these things, all of these questions either will be answered on the surface of Mars or long discussed in the meantime.
Or never be achieved in our lifetime or in our concept of life.
Yes, I don't think I'll be spending much time worrying about it.
No. Well, if these poor people are going on a Mars trip, I wonder if there's any way that they can actually feel in contact with the little blue planet that's receded.
They can do what E.T. did.
What's that?
He phoned home, so they just give him a ring.
Uplifting, informing, empowering. Joy 94.9.
You're with Phil and Chris, been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks very much for your feedback. We love getting your little emails. How can we do that, Phil?
You can send us an email at beenthere@joy.org.au.
And we want to say thank you also to Julia, who does our podcasts, because some of our listeners listen to us in podcast form. So you miss out on the music tracks that we play, but you get a little flavour of those. But that is the beauty of podcasting. You can listen to them when you want them, where you want them.
And even on your smart TV.
Well, you can hear Joy on smart TV this time round.
But our podcasts you can access through iTunes.
Oh, really?
Yep.
And you've got a smart TV that does that, doesn't it?
My brother does.
Oh, right, no.
So I've seen it done.
Okay, then. You're with Chris and Phil, been there, done that, our history program, and we've got a couple of people to talk about now, legends in their own time. First, we've got the birthday person, March the 4th, 1969, of Chastity Sun Bono, who is now known by another name, but was born to Sonny Bono and Cher.
And often appeared on their super cheesy TV show.
As little babe.
Yes, being held in Sonny's arms.
Oh, right.
And he wasn't very big, so she must have been very little.
So having been born in the unreal world of Sonny and Cher, Chastity then realised that she wasn't quite the same as everybody else. She had this thought in her mind since she was 13. She knew she was different, but she finally found out that that difference meant that she was gay. However, in her role as lesbian, she still wasn't comfortable. And in 2008, she began transitioning, the physical and social transition from female to male.
But see, that I don't know if that's common, but it makes a lot of sense to me that, A, you discover that you're different, because yeah. I can relate to that. And I guess the first thing that would occur to you if you're attracted to women and you're in a female body, that you must be a lesbian.
Hmm.
But if that doesn't fill all the spots and makes the story complete, then it's the next logical thing in my mind is, well, what other situations would explain these feelings?
Yeah.
And
so you're saying she really wasn't a lesbian because she wasn't...
Well, she was in the wrong body, so yeah. the feelings are real. And the explanation is, well, if I'm in this body, then I must be a lesbian. That's logic.
That's the first logic. But the alternative logic is that if she was a male, then
the attraction is still valid.
Is valid, yeah.
And see, that's where I don't think nature uses logic.
No.
We do, and we try to make sense. So she's gone, or he's gone through these various stages looking for the answer and the comfort zone. And there we are now with Chaz Bono. Who's quite happy.
It's Chaz's hope that his choice in transition will open the hearts and minds of the public regarding the issue of reassignment of gender.
I think it's got a really bad history. Like in your 60s movies, you'd go to Europe and come back as the opposite sex.
Yeah.
It was almost a joke.
It was.
And
just if he had a good coming out as a lesbian in the gay community that surrounded her and her family.
Well, see, given her family, she couldn't do anything quietly.
No.
That was a psychedelic time, and two parents were
The family life was documented on TV in the show, and so the next step was to document her acknowledgement of her lesbian inclinations, but then the next thing was to show the public, very bravely, of the transition from chastity to Chaz.
And full points for keeping looking. Because a lot of people would say, well, you know, I must be lesbian, this is how I live my life, and give up on the true happiness that comes once you discover that, you know, you don't match your body and it can be fixed.
That particular change of body and of acknowledging that you're not part of the regular world was actually highlighted by our second person in this little chat group. 2nd of March 1942, he was born, better known now as Lou Reed, and he died in 2013. Age 70, so he had a very good long life. But in 1942, he was born, and then in 1962, he started a musical career. He played the guitar, learning it from the radio.
He actually had a very long and varied career before we knew him, and he went through all sorts of various stages. He, I guess, hooked up with Andy Warhol in the later years and sort of jumped on that bandwagon, which would have been a real thrill ride.
Yeah.
Probably quite scary, but...
Yeah, I think his family life when he was growing up wasn't particularly wonderful, because his sister apparently said that he, as a teenager, he suffered panic attacks because he became socially awkward and possessed a fragile temperament and was highly focused on things that he liked, principally music. But the family life wasn't particularly wonderful, and his parents made him feel guilty because they were inadequate, and they actually consented to Lou Reed actually having electroconvulsive therapy to control his panic attacks and his other things. At that time, apparently, they put things down your throat so you don't swallow your tongue, and they put electrodes on your head, and that's when they fry your brain. This was the process that was done in the county that they were living in to discourage homosexual feelings. And the effect is that you lose your memory and become a vegetable. You can't read a book because you get to age 17 and have to go right back to the beginning again to start over. So upon his recovery from a bout of illness and associated treatment, Lou Reed started developing a real interest in music, and eventually a little bit later he got to 1972, where he wrote a particular song called Walk on the Wild Side, and that was discussing alternative life.
It was sort of describing a lot of the people that he was dealing with in the Andy Warhol society, if you like.
Yeah.
Because they would have attracted all the outsiders, not just gay people, but artists and people who just didn't fit in any other slot, basically.
Yeah.
And this was in New York, which has endless supply of odd people.
Lou Reed had his career and he discussed all these sorts of things and had various forms of music, but we remember him from this particular song, Walk on the Wild Side, here on Joy. And isn't this the typical opening of the particular song? You know what it is from this particular intro.
Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked away across USA, plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved legs, and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. She was everybody's darling, but she never lost her head. Even when she was given head, she says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go do 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 do. Gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey Joe, take a walk on the wild side. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey sugar, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Alright. Ha. Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was James Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that patch. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, do 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 do.
And to the sound of Lou Reed with that incredibly bold song for those days. That was Walk on the Wild Side. Time for us to go, young Phil.
We'll see you next week. Or you'll hear us next week.
Indeed. And Mr. Gordon will be back and can tell us all about his adventures. Here on Joy. Thanks for being with us. We've enjoyed your company. All the best. Cheers now.
Bye for now.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.